from New York City. It's the Gary Moore Show. Your host, Gary Noll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noll, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. I'd like to welcome you from all over the world. We're heard everywhere. And people pass on the information. And today, you're going to get a lot of information from my guest in the second part of our program. Professor Peter Phillips is here. And Peter has been the guiding voice and consciousness behind Project Censored. He's here to discuss a topic that the media has not either been aware of or afraid to touch, and that is the elites. No, I'm not talking about the Koch brothers and George Soros and Jeff Bezos. No, those people couldn't even get in the door with all their money combined compared to the people that have the real money. We're talking about trillions of dollars in their corporate interest. Collectively, 50 trillion's nothing for these people. What do they control? Who are they? What are they doing with their money? How does that impact us? How does that impact our future? How much of that money is invested in the war machine? Peter will dissect this issue exclusively for us today, because I'm sure many people watching need to know this. Also today, in a few moments, I will take the latest report, quoting verbatim from an article written by Robert Rubin, the former top person at Citicorp, and also the former Treasury Secretary under Bill Clinton. And he's making a statement that I will quote from, saying that, in fact, I'll give it to you right now. He says that, that the U.S. ratio of gross domestic product, that's how much money we bring in the United States compared to our debt, went from 33% in 2000 to 78% today. That's tremendous. That's a tremendous false statement he's made. Now, he's the head of the Council on Foreign Relations, arguably the most important group of technocrats, the best and brightest out of the best Ivy League schools that go to Washington and take over different agencies that provide our foreign and domestic policies. That all comes out of the Council on Foreign Relations, the David Rockefeller Forum Group. How could he be so wrong? I forgot. He is no more an error, because the media will not challenge him on his figures. I will. I'll show you today, by detailed number, exactly how much debt we're in. And no, it's not 73 or 75%, it's a huge number. And I'll break it down, because when you look at how much personal debt, corporate debt, and government debt there is, we're in trouble. It's over $220 trillion. So I'll discuss that. But we always start with the latest on health and healing. The newest research out of Ohio State University shows that people who are married, who fight, and fight in a way that is actually nasty, are more likely to suffer from leaky guts, a problem that unleashes bacteria into the blood, bad bacteria in the blood, and can drive up disease-causing inflammation. So it's the first study to illuminate this particular pathway between bad marriages or relationships and poor health. That's according to the lead researcher at the Institute of Behavioral Medicine Research at Ohio State University and their Wexner Medical Center. And the journal Psychoneuroendocrinology just published it. So what they said is, quote, "We think that this everyday marital distress, at least for some people, is causing changes in the gut that lead to inflammation and potentially illness." Now, if you've been listening to this program, then you know that cancer, diabetes, heart disease, dementia, Alzheimer's, fibromyalgia are all caused by inflammatory cytokines or inflammation. We know that distress and its hormones also cause inflammation. So when we're angry, when we're rageful, when we are in emotional conflict, we are producing the very underlying conditions of our crisis. Also, there's a what's called coral bush, and it's showing promise against inflammatory conditions. In fact, the coral, C-O-R-A, bush, B-U-S-H, has been shown to have antimicrobial, anti-malarial properties. And this was published in the British Journal. So one more thing, I like to bring things each day to your attention that you may not have heard of that can help you with bacterial infections, with inflammation, even anti-influenza. So the next time someone says, take your flu shot, just remember this. And I have an important study I don't think I'll have time to get to today, where a medical doctor and a team of physicians out of India is claiming, and I'll give you all the citations, that over 50,000, mainly children in India, have succumbed to a vaccine for polio. Why isn't that big news? Why aren't we hearing about it? A bad vaccine killing so many people? You will. So imagine now that they say that if you took the flu vaccine and you don't get the flu, even if you do such things as exercise, de-stress, detox, have more fruits and vegetables, more juices, more supplements like vitamin D, echinacea, astragalus, and coenzyme Q10, vitamin B3, all of which help support your immune system and prevent the body from being susceptible to influenza, none of that will get credit. That's how corrupt science has become. That if you take a vaccine and you don't come down with the disease, 100% of the credit for you're not coming down with it goes to the vaccine. Nothing for lifestyle. That's how bad it is. So the next time someone says, well, we have the proof, good, show it to me. Show me the proof that this year, last year, and the year before's vaccines for influenza worked. Show me. I'll show you the figures, and they don't. But this one coral bush, again, C-O-R-A-L-B-U-S-H, does, according to that study. And also, more good research coming from the Brighton and Sussex Medical School show that cold sore virus, you know, you get the cold sores on your lips, inside your mouth, and cardiovascular damage are linked. Now, this is the first time that a herpes virus, similar to the one that causes cold sores, has been linked to immune cells that can damage cardiovascular tissue. And this was done at the medical school in England and found that a relevant number of specific types of immune cells arise when infection with the cytomegalovirus is present. And their findings were published in this month's journal on cytomegalovirus infection. Now, why is that important? Because a lot of dentists know that infections in your gums, around your teeth, in your throat, can migrate to the heart and hurt your heart. So therefore, don't use alcohol-based mouthwashes. It destroys the healthy bacteria that you're needing in your mouth. Also, make sure that you get twice a year dental exams so they can check to see if those little pockets around your gum, you know, they take that little instrument that has a little sharp edge on it, and they take it up through each of your teeth, in between your teeth. They're actually seeing whether or not you have gingivitis or periodontal conditions. If they press the gum and any kind of pus comes out or blood comes out, you have an infection. They'll check to see if there's demineralization of your jawbone, all of which we can prevent and frequently reverse. But the viruses in your mouth, if you have like a cytomegalovirus, it can kill you. It can infect your heart. And one way to help bring that down, if you test and have cytomegalovirus, intravenous vitamin C with aqueal vitamin A, which is a liquid-based vitamin A that doesn't accumulate in the liver. And that I have found in many people I've worked with is able to get rid of herpes virus and cytomegalovirus and Epstein-Barr virus. Important. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm going a little short today because I want to give more time to my guest. We're going to take a very brief break. All the music today is in memory of One of the greatest performers in history, Aretha Franklin, who just passed. And we'll be right back. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I want to share some insights because, as you know, on this program, we deal with a lot of important issues. For example, when they started telling us what the unemployment numbers were officially, we knew they were wrong because we had just finished being on the road filming on and off for 7 years for the multi-award-winning documentary Poverty, Inc. And we knew that there were tens of millions of Americans who were not being counted. So how can you say that unemployment is officially at one level, very low, that everyone takes credit for and says our economy is booming? Not true. And yet there were over 96 million Americans who had worked, weren't working, or not working full time, and they were excluded. Because when your unemployment insurance runs out, you're excluded. You're no longer on an unemployment figure. When you stop looking for work, because you can't find it, or you can only find work for a few hours, you're excluded. Now, let's say you're unemployed and you get two jobs, and they're part-time jobs. Those are considered two full-time jobs on their figures. So we have been lied to and manipulated. I say that then I'm now going to challenge the Council on Foreign Relations, its lack of scholarship, and Robert Rubin and his lack of awareness. Here's what it says, the following, and I'll read this. This is directly from him, published in the Washington Post. And by the way, Robert Rubin was co-chair emeritus of the Council on Foreign Relations, was U.S. Treasury Secretary from 1995 to 1999. And he said, quote, at a panel I recently moderated in New York about our country's unsustainable fiscal outlook, someone asked a simple question. So what? Nothing bad has happened despite immense fiscal deterioration. Our debt to gross domestic product ratio has more than doubled in less than 20 years, from 33% in 2000 to 78% today, and is on course to reach nearly 100% in 10 years and continuing. So why worry now? These are good questions, and they reflect a precept I learned years ago. Substantive fiscal policy work is essential. And he goes on to say, despite rising debt, interest rates have remained low and a fiscal crisis has not occurred. That is because private demand for business investment has been sluggish in a slow recovery. The Federal Reserve has provided liquidity through its unconventional monetary policy, and fiscal markets often ignore unsustainable fiscal conditions for an extended time. Our ability to borrow and our own currency does eliminate these risks. All right, just on points of fact, I have here in front of me, if you're watching this by going to Progressive Radio Network Facebook, you'll see a chart. This is the government's chart. This is the U.S. debt clock. So my figures are the government's own figures, nothing made up. And here's the actual figures. And of those of you who care about our debt to gross domestic product, meaning the total amount of money coming in to pay our bills and the total amount of bills we're paying and obligations and debt. First of all, people frequently confuse two numbers. The total U.S. debt includes the deficit. The deficit is merely year to year of how much money that we spent that was not paid off. And this year, it's $21.3 trillion. But what is the total debt? A federal deficit, $71 trillion. Now, our state debts, meaning the inability of states to meet their budgets, including under constitutional requirements, is $1.2 trillion. We actually went through every single state and calculated the total number, and it matched what this clock says, $1.2 trillion. So for those of you who are living on state pensions and that state is running out of money or has run out of money to pay those, what do you think the likely outcome is going to be when a county or municipality that you've worked for as a school teacher, police officer, firefighter, or in the local government can no longer pay for your retirement, your pension? They're going to reduce it, renegotiate it, or eliminate it, even if it's protected by state constitution, because the state is also bankrupt. Now, the local debt, how much the local municipalities around the United States have, this is a red flag. $1.9 trillion. Let me repeat that. Local municipalities are in debt to $1.9 trillion. Now, why are these figures important? Let's give a context to this. Let's just use the state of California, where my guest Peter lives and his wife. And I have said for some time, and I was on the radio on KPFK until I chose to leave it because I didn't like what it was doing and its management. I was there 33 years, 6 hours a week. And I kept asking every time I go out, why are you living here? I know why people would have lived there at one time, but why now when you're on an earthquake fault? You've got Diablo nuclear power plants are right at the water. They have to be to suck in 2 billion gallons of water a day to cool the reactors and the spent fuel rods. But what happens if there's an earthquake? What happens if there's a tsunami? Well, there couldn't be a tsunami. Well, that's what the Fukushima operators said, and there was a 70-foot tsunami overwhelmed it, and look at the mess today. Now, that's in Japan. What would happen if that were in the United States and your nearest community is Los Angeles? You're going to infect over 20 million people in that immediate area. So it's just at one level to deny the power of global warming is to be engaged in absolute nihilistic hubris. So now, right now, today, as we're on the air speaking, we have hundreds of fires across the United States, the most fires that California's ever had, major fires. Now, those major fires are going to come back. In fact, according to all of the climatologists, the worst fires you're seeing now, including in Colorado, what they call a firestorm, a tsunami, that's what the fire chief said, 300-foot high flames, something that's never been viewed in America before. So if that's the new norm, it means it's going to happen with regularity. And the new storms, dropping more precipitate matter, more rain than ever before, that's the new norm. And a Category 4 hitting Florida, 7 million people had to evacuate, massive damage. That's the new norm. People in 2 or 3 or 4 years from now will think a Category 4 would be a good thing compared to a Category 5 or possibly even they're projecting models of a Category 6 over 200 miles. So, what would happen if the people of Miami had to realize that it's not sustainable? From the Keys clear up the coast, over 250,000 homes would be affected and are. Then where's your tax base going to come from to pay for schools, road repair, fire, police, improvements? Your tax base has to stay there and have a constantly appreciating value. Now look at California. If they were honest, the governor and all the other people would say California is no longer sustainable. We're in constant 24/7 fire cycle. So we should be looking to where there are safer places, more sustainable places for people to live and help them in a reasonable and responsible way to get there. Everything's being denied. Complete shutdown of reality about the power of hurricanes. Everyone in Florida, everyone on my block where I have an animal sanctuary, been there 25 years nearly. No one's moving. And yet they just had a lot of damage and no insurance to cover it all. What happens when the second storm comes or the third? What happens when two big storms come in the same season? Now, we haven't even recovered from the first storm 10 months ago, and we're right back into the season again. So we're looking at local governments, the very ones that currently owe $1.9 trillion in debt, going bankrupt. So what do you think going to be the value of your property when the local community goes bankrupt, when there's no longer a police force because there's no money to pay it, when schools cannot stay open. What's going to happen when the wealthy start to move out of a community, and hence the upper middle class, the professional class, the middle working middle class start to move behind them? We have 21 states that are not sustainable for the future. My concern is, if we're not told the truth, we cannot make appropriate and proper and reasonable decisions of what to do. So you didn't know that we had 1.9 million debt. So we're going to see massive bankruptcies in the coming future. Now, the U.S. unfunded entitlements are $114.3 trillion. The U.S. debt held by foreign nations that nobody talks about, because everyone's kind of glib. Well, they're never going to, you know, be paid that money. You know, they've got U.S. treasuries. Well, what is all treasury and all currency backed by? The good faith of the United States government. So what happens when we've alienated enough countries, when the BRIC nations that have been hit with multiple sanctions, including Russia, what happens when they go off the dollar as the primary reserve and start using mixed currencies? And that's happening now as we're here. So the dollar is functionally worthless. We are bankrupt. We're not just bankrupt. We're bankrupt with a hormone flush. That's how bad it is. Here are the figures. Unlike Mr. Rubin, mine are actually accurate. The grand federal total debt is $194.5 trillion, and this is the percentage of debt to our gross domestic product, 940% debt. Hence, outside of Zimbabwe, we have more debt to gross domestic product than Greece, and we call Greece a basket case, than Yugoslavia, or the old Yugoslavia, and now broken up. If you looked at Lithuania and Latvia and Ireland and France, France is a basket case financially. Italy's a basket case financially. England is also debt to gross domestic product in any between 200% and 400%, and we're at 900%, and we're lecturing the world on fiscal responsibility. And corporations just bought back their own treasury stock to the tune of $1 trillion. But then that's the federal government and state governments and local governments. What about you? Here's the reality. We ran these figures also. Total personal debt, $19 trillion. Mortgage debt, $15.1 trillion. Student loan debt, $1.5 trillion. Credit card debt, $1 trillion. Corporate debt, $6.3 trillion, for a total of $42.9 trillion. There's no way this is going to be paid. So expect more home foreclosures, expect cars to repossess, expect debtors' prisons to explode with populations. And all the while, both the corporate liberal and corporate conservative Democrats and Republicans have made promises to change, and they've done nothing, zero, except double down by giving money to the military-industrial complex. It's now actually 67% of all of our disposable income goes to private contractors who are not in the business of enhancing the quality of life. So add up the government debt and personal debt, and you're at $237.4 trillion. Now, put on top of that the amount, massive amount of actual unemployment and disease and obesity and heart disease and cancers, a whole epidemic and dementia and Alzheimer's, and add on to that global warming. Wonder what could go wrong. And no one's doing anything about anything. And we're supposed to think that we're doing great. We're not. Back in a moment with my guest. Please stay with us.
listen, baby.
Tell your sister. In the studio with me now, you can see him on the camera, is someone who has been speaking truth to power for a long time. He is a professor of over a quarter century, Peter Phillips, professor of sociology at Sonoma State University in California, and he was also the former founding director of Project Censored and former president of the Media Freedom Foundation. He's edited 14 books. In fact, one of the very first at Columbia University, investigative journalist Gary Webb was a recipient, and my publisher, Seven Stories Press, Dan Simon and I were there, and it couldn't have gone to a better human being. Gary never committed suicide. Anyone who thinks he did simply doesn't know him. He was a friend of mine. And again, that's for a different topic, but thank you for honoring, in my opinion, one of the finest investigative journalists in America, a truly unique human being. He never blinked from controversy, and he never backed off from a challenge. You have a new book now. It's called Giants, The Global Power Elite, and it's just been published. We've been led to believe that it's the Koch brothers, it's George Soros, it's some of the people on Wall Street who we should be concerned about. They're reckless and irresponsible, narcissistic and megalomaniac behaviors, that they're taking power, money, resources out of the economy. They will leave nothing on the table, and they'll only give to charity what they get credit for, like a new school or, you know, a wing of a hospital, like David Geffen, these other people. You know, they have the money. But what are they doing on a day-to-day basis to reinvest in America, to reinfuse capital from very corporations that some of these banks and corporations have lobbied to get out of America, causing massive jobs loss? But that's only a small part of the story. I'd like you to take your time, uninterrupted, and guide us through what you discovered that is absolutely, it'll take your breath away. The forum is yours.
Well, Gary, thank you very much. Someone like Jeff Bezos is now listed as the richest person in the world at $150 billion. He's part of the global 1% of the world. He's part of the transnational capital class. But he's not in this list of the global power elite that we've researched and developed. Now, we're looking at the sociology of the powerful. And so that's, the forest. And Bezos is one tree in the forest. So the people managing global capital are doing so through these large transnational investment companies like BlackRock and Chase Manhattan Bank and Bank of America and Barclays. There's 17 that have over $1 trillion worth of investment capital that they're managing. Now, this is investment capital that belongs to billionaires and 36 millionaires in the world and other people that put their money in there. But they're the ones making the decisions where to invest it and how it plays out. So they go into defense contractors, they invest in Coca-Cola, they go wherever they want. They're looking for a return in the 3 to 10% range. So these 17 companies with over $1 trillion collectively controlled in 2017 $41 trillion worth of wealth. This year, they're probably closer to $50 trillion. And they have 199 people on their boards of directors. That's it. I mean, that would fit in a medium-sized university classroom. And they generally all know each other. They're all intergaged in a variety of policy councils, and they all go to Davos together and hang out. So we have this tight network of fewer than 200 people managing $50 trillion, and a trillion is 1,000 billions. So this is, 5,000 times more than Bezos in terms of capital. And that's an immense amount of power and control in the world. So every government, every capitalist government, every intelligence agency, the military, and the media are all in support of global capital's growth and expansion and protection. That's what capitalism is about. So we identify these people as the financial core of the transnational capitalist class, and they serve on many other smaller asset boards as well. Many of these people are quite amazing. So BlackRock is number one, and they have $5.4 trillion worth of dollars in management in 2017. Vanguard, number two out of Valley Forge, has $4.3 trillion. J.P. Morgan Chase, of course, in New York, has $3.8 trillion. Allianz, out of Germany, which owns PEMCO here in the U.S. PEMCO is the largest bond market company, and they're now owned by a German firm, Allianz, and they have $3.3 trillion in investment capital. UBS out of Switzerland, and it goes on. There's 17 that have over one trillion. Now, what's interesting about these is they all invest in each other. So they're all collectively engaged in global capital market growth and support policies that will continue to give them a return on that capital. And they're locked into it. They have to grow. They want to get percentage, you know, money back to their investors. So these 17 firms have over $400 billion invested in each other. So they're a network of money all clustered together, interconnected, and the central, it's what makes the world go around. I mean, they're the essential factors of global capitalism, and they're completely interlocked. So underneath them are, in 2018, as we were writing the book, three new companies are gone from Netherlands, Nexus, and from France, and they became trillion-dollar companies, and there's several more that are 800, 900 billion. So you look at these top 30 companies, and they're closer to $70 trillion worth of capital that they're controlling. So that they're locked into investment. They're very heavily invested in Silicon Valley. So Apple, Alphabet, you know, Facebook, all of those have billions of dollars that they're invested in. But they're also invested heavily in Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman. They make money off of war. Now, one of the biggest problems these companies have is finding adequate places to get a good return. They have more capital than they've got adequate investment possibilities. So there's a couple of mechanisms that help them continue to get return. One of them is war. Wars are very profitable for investment companies because they can invest in Lockheed Martin and they sell war materials. They blow things up and then they can invest in repair and construction. So war, permanent war now in the world, is a way of continuing to supply capital returns to centralized global capital in the world. So war is good for capital. The other way, they still have too much excess capital. They're pressuring governments to sell off public resources. So whether it's universities or libraries or schools or public parks, I mean, it's privatized the world. Because they have excess capital, they can buy up anything they want. And they still have a problem in that there isn't enough good places to return it all. So then they'll edge into speculative investments or more risky ones. And that's what happened in 2008 with the subprime mortgage investments. And that all collapsed. I mean, it almost brought down the entire financial system. So, and some companies were collapsed, some were merged, and then governments went into massive quantitative easing, creating new money to keep them all afloat and continue this whole process of global capital growth. It's quite an amazing process when you get right down to it. And now we've identified the people by name and their positions, their policy links, their personal public debt, I mean public wealth, where they went to school, and can show that they are a tight network of just a few hundred people that are managing all of this global capital, and all governments and intelligence agencies are in their service.
I appreciate the overview. Thank you, Peter. Let's break this down a little further. First up, right now, I have a story that I was going to report on today about, I asked you before we went on the air, about my feelings about Libya. Our staff and I have researched clear back to the beginning of Gaddafi in Libya and up through when NATO and Hillary and Barack's were destroyed Libya. And we found just an overview of the following. We found it was the most advanced in human rights of any of the 54 countries of Africa. Women had more freedoms than any other Muslim nation on the planet. In fact, it was against the law to insult a woman in Libya. You could go to jail. Whereas in Saudi Arabia, our ally, the one we do business with, women have almost no freedoms unless a man gives it to them. And that's also true in the United Arab Emirates and other countries. But there they did. Most people are not even aware. Gaddafi wasn't even the head of the government for the last 4 years before we started this conflict. They have more constitutional committees all over the country, thousands of them, where the local people in a community, because there were over 200 tribes, they could make their own rules. And then everyone had to abide by their rules in their communities. It wasn't from the government. Every drop of oil that was sold, and they have one of the best oils in the world, the light crude, that went into a general fund and then was shared with the different people. There was no debt, zero debt. They had the golden era that they were promoting and with the African Union. They had the largest reservoir sharing water with over 190 million people living in Africa. There was free education, and no one was without a home. And when we mocked in the media Gaddafi living in a tent, they didn't do their homework. There's such a lack of scholarship. Gaddafi said to his people, "I and my mother and father will not have a home till every Libyan has it." And he honored his word. We have heard from his own personal bodyguards. You know those women around him? He brought them to the table. He never sexually assaulted them, like others have claimed. He was very conscious of their needs as human beings. And you could go to any place in the world to be medically treated. They would pay for your whole trip, your transportation. If it was $1 million, they would pay for it. Education, if they didn't have the education there you wanted, you could go to Harvard. They paid for it. And a stipend. Married, got paid for it. And it was called the Paris. This is the key. It was called the Paris of Africa. So we went back and we got all the film footage for 40 years. We got all the photographs for 40 years. We got all the news stories for 40 years and saw that everything CNN, Obama, Clinton especially, were lying. There was no need. He did not represent a threat. Now, slavery is in the open market in Libya. People are being sold for slavery. So my question was this. Where is this media? Why isn't CNN, these other clowns over there, why aren't they at NBC? Why isn't Rachel Maddow taking people from the liberal media and going to Libya, going in their town square and saying, "Gee whiz, is this what you thought was a good idea? And why aren't you held accountable for it? Those of you who did this, but we didn't make George Bush. We didn't make Colin Powell. We didn't make, you know, Condoleezza Rice responsible for what happened in Iraq and Afghanistan. Why is it that the media never holds people responsible when our domestic and foreign policies, headed by the very people, the very group you're talking about, and the Council on Foreign Relations, in my opinion, the most dangerous group of people in America, why is it that there's never a single word ever in the media about their culpability, their responsibility for all the crimes against humanity that were done by their token of being complicit, either by writing an article, broadcasting what they left out of a story, what they wouldn't cover, instead of just telling the truth? These people are screw-ups and on their own. They couldn't open a drugstore without going bankrupt. Your thoughts?
Well, a quick thing to say is that corporate media, the big news channels, are the ideologists for the global power elite. I mean, they're presenting their point of view, and they always have. And increasingly, the giants are invested in all the corporate media. Some, of course, Redstone and some of those are family-owned. But they're massively invested and strongly influence the content of what's going on. Gaddafi, his big problem, his big sin from the capitalist perspective, was that he was trying to start a Bank of Africa and sell his oil in gold, and create his own money, and he wanted to quit using dollars for gold investment, and he was allowing the Chinese to come in and invest heavily in Libya. None of that was acceptable to the global central capitalists, and so their functionaries, Clinton included, who was Secretary of State then under Obama, decided it was time to remove Gaddafi. And removing is creating counter forces, funding them, bringing in mercenaries to kill people, starting a so-called revolutionary. They've done it very well in a number of other countries.
Including Syria.
Including Syria.
One second. Just yesterday, I wanted to see, there was a guest going to appear on Neil Cavuto's show. And Neil Cavuto and this person, the so-called expert, right, from one of these councils, is talking about how, you know, well, he crossed that red line and, you know, Assad used chemical weapons. There was never any proof that Assad used weapons. To
Absolutely.
The contrary,
right.
At least six major journalists, including ones that we work with, that went into Syria, found that those were Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and the United States, Great Britain, and France's terrorists, meaning our terrorists that
yes.
we were paying for. And not a word. And there's acting. They're talking as if it's a fait accompli. Whatever the media tells us, we should believe, and they're lying.
After Russia collapsed, or the Mujahideen took over in Afghanistan, there were all these trained fighters, and the Al-Qaeda, which simply in Arabic means the list, these were the people trained by the CIA. They were airshipped into Macedonia and into the Balkans to fight the war there against the Serbs. Later, some of those very same people show up in Libya and are engaged there. And even later, there's a movement over in Syria. So all this, all the regime changes, whether it's Iraq and the attempted regime change in Iran and Venezuela, it's all about global capital, protecting where investments can go with no resistance, and a dictator that a strong person in a country that benefits his people is unacceptable to global capital. They want a free flow of money to be invested there and an exchange out. So they want a compliant government that will allow money to be invested and taken out, and not piles. Austerity means not spending money on your own people. So they're forcing places like Greece to cut back on benefits for the working class, and, you know, literally looting the country to the banks, the investment capital banks that are worldwide. That's what happens. I mean, it's an amazing process, and governments and military and all, they go along with it completely. They'll never talk about it openly, but they completely go along with it, and the media is the ideologists. And there's public relation firms that package news stories for corporate media to air as if they were collecting the news. So these big Omnicom, WPP, and Interpublic Group are these big, giant public relation firms that supply corporate media with 80% of their news. And, you know, as they represent all the capital products in the world. I mean, you go into Safeway, everything there is represented by one of these firms. And they're trying to convince you to buy things. You know, spend and go into debt personally, spend everything you've got, make yourself, and then make you afraid that somebody, Al-Qaeda, is going to get you or terrorists are going to get you to encourage and support permanent war spending.
Then you look at this president who said, are you ready for this? I actually have the clip. Jesse, if you would find the clip, I just sent it over on President Trump talking about the Phantom C-35. We have Bernie Sanders, who on the one hand, and I congratulate him for, you know, being interested in creating public education that is free, he supports our interventions. He supports Israel and Israel's occupation of the Palestinians. He supports war and has. Now, on some issues, at least the rest of them don't support anything that's humanitarian anywhere. They're 100% behind the guys that you're talking about, these 200 and their corporations. But then we've got a president that is so out of touch with reality in everything that he's there making a speech about the most expensive armaments deal in history on one plane. It's over $1 trillion now. And no one will stop it. No one will slow it down. And then a Barack Obama comes along, wins Nobel Prize, Peace Prize, and gives $1.5 trillion for new nuclear weapons. Instead of de-escalating and denuclearizing, Hillary comes around to run for office and says that she's going to keep his programs so she can capture his people. And I'm thinking, surely there's someone out there in the liberal community who's got a brain, who's listening to this. These are warmongers. Who's making them responsible? They could have stopped Rwanda. They chose not to. They were told to stand down. They could have not had the Bosnian War and the carnage there. They didn't. They knew the truth about Benghazi. Everyone knew the truth about Benghazi, and nobody would tell it even under oath, because then we would have to acknowledge that we had taken Gaddafi's weapons that we had gotten and were bringing them through to our terrorists in Syria to use against Assad to unseat him. That means the CIA, the Defense Department, and the Secretary of State all would have been complicit in crimes against humanity. So both sides decided we won't deal with this. They only dealt with the four guys that died and Chris Stevens. They didn't tell the truth. So we're not getting the truth from anybody. And let's see, did we have that segment? Let's just put your headset on. Oh, you got it on. Let's just hear what the President of the United States, who's the Commander-in-Chief, has to say about the most expensive airplane ever created.
We have some of our great business leaders and leaders, period, right behind me. I may ask Marilyn Lockheed, the leading woman's business executive in this country, according to many. And we buy billions and billions of dollars worth of that beautiful F-35. Well, it's stealth. You cannot see it. Is that correct? Better be correct, right?
The video showing the stealth is how dumb is a human being when he doesn't realize it's not invisible? You can see the damn plane, but on every single thing he talks about, there's no scholarship, and the people around him are the very people, the generals and the think tanks, the neocons like John Bolton, who are wanting us to be in perpetual war. And where is the ethical, conscious people in Congress saying, I will not fund this bill, the National Security Act. I will not fund the National Defense Authorization Act, the Patriot Act. I will not accept asset forfeiture. And yet, Democrat and Republican both alike are right at that big trough feeding on it. Your thoughts?
Well, perpetual war is good for business. It's good for the global power elite. They want perpetual war. They're all invested. I mean, the Lockheed Martin, all of the big investment companies, State Street, Capital Group, Vanguard, BlackRock, Bank of New York Mellon, FMR, Morgan Stanley, Prudential, Credit Suisse, Allianz, J.P. Morgan, Credit, Amundi, France, Barclays, they're all invested in Lockheed Martin for $50 billion. So it's you know, they get a return on that.
A big return, more than 3 to 10% you were suggesting they're
looking
for. Well,
in some cases, it's higher, yes.
And think of how much money they make off payday loans, up to 1,000% when a person can't afford and it keeps rolling over. And think about a credit card. When you miss a credit card payment, it goes from 18% up to almost 38%. Those are huge returns in the private prison system where they're guaranteed when they build a system, a prison, that up to 98% must be occupied, which means then the judges and prosecutors are going to put people that otherwise would not have gone to jail into these jails. Why aren't people in the media reporting on what we become? We become indentured slaves to the corporate capitalist masters. That's a reality.
That is a reality. And the global power elite, they use non-governmental policy groups like the Trilateral Commission, the Council of 30, and the Atlantic Council are all non-governmental, funded by corporations, to put out policy reports that governments and NATO pay attention to. So they'll the Council of 30 is probably the executive committee of global capitalism. Rockefeller funded, created in the 70s. It's 32 people who meet in Washington and with a staff, and they put out reports that they'll recommend policies to the World Bank, International Monetary Fund, you know, all the transnational institutions.
Look at the World Bank.
And they follow it. I mean,
yeah. And the Council on Foreign Relations, they follow.
Yes.
Look at every single president going back up to John F. Kennedy, gave regular talks at the Council on Foreign Relations. Why? That's a private group. And these are not the best and brightest human beings. These are not people whose ideas and visions of what should be are sustainable. They are not dealing with global warming. They are not dealing with environmental degradation. They're not dealing with animal factory farming. They're not dealing with the real causes of disease, which is taxing us to about $3 trillion. But then you realize they own the hospitals. They own the pharmaceutical companies. They own the – they're the ones when you go and get a hip replaced and it costs you $80,000 where you get the same hip replacement in France for $3,000. They're the ones who are profiting. We're not aware of how they've insinuated themselves economically into so many corporations that they're getting their dollar from everywhere.
The Council of Foreign Relations, and Larry Shoup was one of my good friends and wrote the book on them, but have historically, going back to the 20s, emphasized U.S. interests. And so the difference from what I'm saying about the global elites now is it's global. The Council has an international policy group. They're increasingly, but they still have a strong orientation to U.S. and U.S. capital. This book is really about the giants in the transnational group. So I find that the Atlantic Council, which is clearly the protectors of global capital, advising NATO, advising the U.S. empire, advising intelligence agencies, and they're the ones right now advising Google and Facebook who to drop out, who to kick off.
Did you see who they just threw off yesterday?
Well,
Telesur.
Yeah, no, Telesur they did once last week, and then they did it again.
And that group is doing good work.
Incredibly good work.
Good work.
I have my students read their material.
Right, they're as good as Intercept.
Absolutely.
And they were thrown out, and I knew that would happen when they threw Alex Jones out. I don't support Alex Jones, but once you open that door and you get rid of someone that everyone says boo to that person, everyone else that you don't like that is really good, you throw out at the same time and no one pays attention.
That's exactly what we're afraid of. And I'm very concerned about that, and I think it's a dangerous precedent.
Matt Taibbi just did a good piece in the Rolling Stone about the danger of when you start doing this. I believe in freedom of speech. I can disagree with someone, but the moment you say, because you're different than me and you don't believe in what I believe in, I don't want you to have a radio show, I don't want you to be given a forum, that's dangerous. Because what happens when they come for you? My final question is this. With all this massive wealth between 45 and 70 trillion dollars different groups of these 200 control, and because they're everywhere trying to make a buck and their name is not up front, so you never know who's really behind something, what's going to happen when the next bubble is going to burst and you have derivatives totaling over 400 trillion dollars? And now Obama, on New Year's Eve, over the year before he left, they passed the bail-in policy that Cyprus had, meaning every dollar you put into a bank, savings account, checking account, doesn't matter, corporate account, that is no longer your money. The moment that money goes in the bank, if something happens and the bank fails, they will confiscate every single dollar because of bail-in, and you get a share, some micro percentage of a share of stock in the bank, but you're not the first in line as a creditor. They are. These corporations, their interests are. And the next crash will be the crash to end all crashes. And I'm fearful that we're not being told the truth of this. And that's why I told you how much in debt we are and how many corporations are in debt. And your final thoughts on this.
Well, the last part of our book is a letter to the global power elite. And we say to all 389 of them, we're facing environmental crisis. We're facing other banking crisis and economic collapse. That's going to lead to war and civil unrest, and literally billions of people could die. And you're the people with the power. You could fix this. And we're calling on you to look at your own hearts and think of your own grandchildren and their grandchildren, and can they exist? And we need, of course, social movements and this kind of radio show to let people know about it, engage in pressuring them, which is why we've identified who they are. We name names. We tell you who these people are and that they're controlling all this wealth. And this is where they work. This is their personal wealth. This is where they went to school. So all of them are reachable and approachable. And I think that's a very important part of what this new book is, The Giants, the Global Power Elite, which is going to be released tonight at Fordham University, Midtown, in Martino Hall on the 7th floor. That's tonight, 6 p.m. reception, 7 p.m. I'll be talking. And that's at 140 West 62nd Street here in New York. And we'd like people to come out for that.
It's a very important must-read book. Peter, thank you for this book. Thank you for your efforts. I've counseled some of the powerful people who have health problems. And in this discussion of talking with them, I have not found they or their offspring are willing to look at humanity as anything less than a commodity. And when you look at them from that humanistic point of view, you have to be appreciative that we're not allowed in their boat. In Davos this past year, they were talking about what are we, the rich and powerful, going to do? Where are we going to go when that crisis you're talking about occurs? And we're not in being invited into their safe space. So I would accept everything in your book, except I would also say we, meaning we the average person, and they, these elites, we're not harmonized in our spiritual values. I wish that we were. It doesn't mean we shouldn't try. We should. But we should also be preparing ourselves for the world that we're faced with. Otherwise, we're going to be blindsided by their arrogance, their hubris to us, and not helping be stewards of the earth that they should have been responsible for. Thank you very much, Peter.
Thank you, Gary.
I'm Gary Nall. I want to thank all of you for tuning in today and hearing our good friend here, Peter Phillips. We'll look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.